Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're back with Total Information AM on KMOX. I'm Megan Lynch with Tom Ackerman. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Sunday that his military's incursion into Russia's Kursk region is to create a buffer zone. It's being called the largest attack on Russia since World War II. Joining us to get some context is Krister Knapp, coordinator of crisis and conflict in historical perspective and teaching professor in the Department of History at WashU in St. Louis. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Good to be back with you, Megan.
The first question we have, and a lot of people have asked, is how was Ukraine able to launch such a surprise invasion on Russian soil?
Well, it's a good question. Russia has over 1,000 miles of border with Ukraine, stretching from its neighboring state, Belarus, all the way down through Ukraine to the Sea of Azov and the Black Sea. And so it's just going to be very hard for them, with most of their troops committed to being in eastern Ukraine and fighting along that front line in the Donbas, to at the same time actually guard that very long border. And so what they have is a lot of conscripts who don't really want to be fighting, who aren't battle tested, who aren't trained as well, who are providing the lines of defense at these border crossings. And it seems pretty clear that what Ukraine did, perhaps with the help of U.S. intelligence, was to find and probe weak spots where they could cross the lines and invade Russia proper. But it wasn't just any random spot, right? They were also looking for places where Russia is running its logistics train. And that train comes right through Kursk Oblast, or the province, which is where they've attacked. So this has tactical and strategic importance for them.
Well, what does this do for Russia with its own citizens? Do they further paint Ukraine now as the aggressors to their citizens and tell them that they're evil? Does this help them in that respect?
Well, you know, Tom, it's been very interesting, because if you watch some of the early footage on social media and in regular media, you'll see that a lot of the Russian citizens, up to 140,000 of them by some accounts, have had to move. And a lot of them have been absolutely startled. And there's this well-known quote that's going around of a woman who said that she has been displaced for a week now since the war started. And everyone's wondering what she means by the war starting, because, of course, the war has been going on for 2.5 years now. And what it shows you is that with Putin's control of the media, he's effectively created a narrative, particularly for the rural sectors of society that maybe have sort of less access to regular information, that that there's not much going on here at all, and it's just a so-called special military operation, unquote, which is what he calls it. And so there's sort of no real sense that these people have that there's much that's going on there, and they've clearly been caught off guard, and so many of them have had to flee. But this actually puts the Ukrainians in an awkward position. How long are they going to maintain occupation of this part of the Kursk province? Because at some point, they too will have to start providing services. And will some Ukrainian soldiers get out of line and start creating atrocities? One hopes not, and I'm sure they've been ordered not to, but this is war, and so you don't know exactly what's going to happen now. So there are risks for what Ukraine is doing here, but I think a lot of the citizens in the region were actually quite surprised, and they're still trying to figure out what's happened to their lives, because they really haven't been very well informed.
We're speaking with WashU's Krister Knapp. Let's talk about some of the ways that this could backfire. You were mentioning those conscripts that aren't necessarily very willing on the Russian side. Could something like this backfire and actually help Russian recruitment efforts?
Well, it's possible. Again, because Putin controls the narrative, he also controls the conscription efforts. And mostly what they're doing for getting new fighters is going to the far hinterlands of Russia in the east, in Siberia, and paying young men from very small, very remote villages. Let's remember that Russia crosses 10 time zones. I mean, it's much, much larger than I think most of us can get our heads around. And so thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away, isolated, are young men in villages that are being recruited who have basically come from very poor communities. And so they're being, their families are offered a lot of money, and they're going to be offered, you know, they'll be a hero when they return. Of course, most of them don't return. And so, you know, I don't know if it's going to really affect much of the conscripting efforts, but it could backfire in other ways. And I think that is part of what Zelensky's going for here, namely, which is to create enough unrest in Russia that would force Putin to negotiate, right? Because Ukraine's got its back to the wall. It's actually losing right now on the main war along the front in the Donbas. And Russia is taking about a kilometer of land every day at high cost, right? But this is a war of attrition. But Russia just has more men, 5-1 by some estimates, and more weapons, 10-1 by some estimates. And they can just grind the Ukrainians down. So I think what Zelensky and the Ukrainian military leadership has understood, and understood from the very beginning as the David in this war with Goliath, is that that they have to fight asymmetrically. And so this incursion into Russia is a way to sort of change the narrative that they were losing, to get Russians to pull fighters out of the Donbas to come and respond to the Ukraine fighters inside Russia proper, to give a huge morale boost to Ukrainian forces who have been fighting for months, if not years now, and wondering when they're going to get a victory, to embarrass Russia, right, and then mainly be in a position to create a territory swap with Russia in future negotiations. And if they can get Russians upset enough with Putin, then there's one more pressure point on him to maybe negotiate for the end of the war. And I think that's the ultimate strategy here.
Zelensky's asking allies to lift restrictions on using Western-supplied weapons to attack deeper into Russia. Lifting restrictions, are pros and cons of allowing that?
Well, obviously, the pros are a number of them, but the obvious one is that allows them to keep doing what they're doing. I mean, what they did when they crossed into Kursk was it was a full mechanized division here, Tom. I mean, this was tanks, armored artillery. They had missiles. They had a coordinated drone strike on airstrips. Western media reports now are suggesting that they've taken out two bridges, which will interrupt Russian logistic flows of weapons and men to the region. And you know, this has been very effective. But the further they go, and the deeper and the wider, the more territory they control, the harder it gets for them to maintain their own logistic supplies. And so there's risk at them being caught and maybe even encircled once Putin moves troops to the regions. In terms of Western weapons, there were British Challenger 2 tanks that were there, but they're not using the long-range missiles that they've wanted. They're still using small drones to do strikes on oil refineries deep inside Russia, but they haven't done anything like a major artillery or major rocket or missile attack deep inside Russia. In that sense, they still seem to be adhering to President Biden's directions to not engage in that kind of warfare. And I think this is the way they're sort of pushing the envelope, is to push into Russia a little bit with the ground forces that they do have, knowing that Biden will probably let that one go by.
With what you know about the history of this region and the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, how likely is it that there will be any type of compromise or peace in this area anytime soon?
I have to say, as much as I try to remain hopeful, my knowledge of the long-term situation in this area is that I'm fairly cynical of any peace agreement or negotiated settlement anytime soon. I mean, as long as certain dynamics remain in place, right, and those we're going to have war for the foreseeable future, or at least some kind of conflict, and those dynamics are that Putin wants all of Ukraine, and if he can't get that, then the East, and he's going to keep fighting until he gets it. And right now he just outnumbers the Ukrainians, and so he believes that it's a waiting game in this war of attrition, and he can get that. So he's willing to keep fighting. Zelensky and the Ukrainians want the Russians out of all of Ukraine. They want all of their land back. They want Crimea back. They want all of their kidnapped children back. They're willing to do a prisoner swap, and they want guaranteed securities that this will not happen again. And those are all non-negotiables for Putin. And so the situation is such that there's not much room to maneuver until one of those two things or both of them changes. Now, there are always the possibilities of a black swan event that Putin dies tomorrow and some new leadership comes in and feels that this is no longer worth it in Russia, or that the situation becomes so untenable for Zelensky that the population in Ukraine puts pressure on him to negotiate. But so far, there's no sign of those things. And, I think this is just a case where you're sort of looking at the battle lines in what is kind of like a new Cold War in Eastern Europe. And Ukraine has replaced the Berlin Wall between Russia and Europe. And this, to me, looks like it's going to be a zone of conflict, hot or cold, going forward for the foreseeable future.
Chris Turnap is the coordinator of Crisis and Conflict and Historical Perspective, teaching professor in the Department of History at Washington University here in St. Louis. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.